So we'll be following through the question sheet that Jerry gave you. So the first question he says is, what was the intent of Paul's rhetorical question posed in verse 1? Verses 1 and 2 read, I am not free, or am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are not you in my work in the Lord? If to others I am not an apostle, yet at least I am to you, for the seal of my apostleship are you in the Lord. So what was the intent of Paul's rhetorical question posed in verse 1? Exactly. Have we seen this before? Have we seen people trying to discredit Paul before?
Yes. Just recently in our study in Galatians, who was trying to discredit Paul at every turn? The Judaizing Christians.
The Judaizers were coming in and trying to apply the law of Moses.
They were trying to apply that law to new Christians.
They were trying to bring them back under the law. And they were trying to discredit Paul there as well, using different tactics. And we'll see what tactic they use here. But nonetheless, this influence is everywhere that Paul goes. He spent 10 years, at least 10 years, with the churches in Galatia, running into this headwind. And he's going to continue to run into it in every church that he establishes all throughout the land. So he's trying to prove his apostleship. Does he need to prove it? He's got God behind him, but he still has this influence, these people who are trying to say that he is not an apostle. And he's defending himself against those who would suggest that since he is not collecting wages for his service, it's because he really isn't an apostle, and he doesn't deserve to be paid. He's going to go into this idea and quell these arguments in just a minute. So apostles were to be witnesses of the Lord. Was Paul a witness of the Lord? Well, let's look at Acts chapter 1 and verse 22. At Acts chapter 1 and verse 22, of the men therefore that have accompanied with us all the time that the Lord Jesus went in and went out among us, beginning from the baptism of John unto the day that he was received up from us, of these must one become a witness with us of his resurrection. Okay? So we see that the Judaizing Christians are going to use this against Paul. Was Paul one of these men? Was he with Jesus from the time of John the Baptist? Was he a witness to that? They have this against him. However, did any of the apostles witness Jesus after he ascended into heaven? Besides Paul. They saw him after he was resurrected. They saw him ascend into heaven. Did anybody besides Paul that we are told about see Jesus after he ascended into heaven? He's a unique apostle in that way. If you look at Acts chapter 2 and verse 32, this Jesus did God raise up, whereof we are all witnesses. They all saw him. All of the apostles saw him, including Paul. Paul is a witness that Jesus Christ was alive and well. And not only did he see him, he saw him after he had ascended into heaven. He became a witness that Jesus was alive and well, even though the apostles hadn't seen him since he had ascended. So Paul is a unique apostle in having witnessed Jesus Christ being alive and having been given and been taught everything he needed to know. We went through this in great detail in our study of the Galatians. that Paul spent 3 years being taught
those things he needed to know. Was he being taught by the other apostles? Absolutely not. He was being taught by the Lord himself.
This also, as we finish out verse 2 here, it was kind of a unique way for him to put it. He says, if to others I am not an apostle, yet at least I am to you. For the seal of my apostleship are you and the Lord. So, just as a seal proves the authenticity of a document, the Corinthian Christians proved the authenticity of Paul's apostleship. For if he wasn't an apostle, then they weren't Christians.
The Corinthians were this seal. They were the seal of Paul's apostleship.
Every church he established was a seal of his apostleship. They verified that what Paul was teaching was approved of God. And that's why he says here, in verse 2, for the seal of my apostleship are you in the Lord. It goes two ways. If he isn't an apostle, then they aren't Christians. And equally, if they're going to say that they're not Christians, then he's not an apostle. But he is, and they are. And they're proof that he is an apostle. Against what apparent criticism did Paul make his defense, or this defense that he was making? Well, they were saying that he wasn't an apostle. And they were saying that he wasn't an apostle because he wasn't collecting money from them. He wasn't demanding anything from them. And we discussed this again in the Galatian letter. When itinerant preachers would come through the cities, what would they demand? How would you recognize these itinerant preachers, these non-apostle, non-Christian preachers? Preaching. They would want to be paid for their services. They would want to be fed. They would want to be kept. They would expect the very best. They were giving a message that everybody needed to hear. And they expected to be recompensed for it. Paul and Barnabas, on the other hand, were asking nothing. In fact, they were working outside to support themselves. Paul, we read in some of the other letters, tended fishing nets, as I remember. So he had another, or he was a tent maker. He had a job. He supported himself. He didn't expect to be supported by the churches that he was establishing throughout the region. He understood that it was his responsibility to take care of himself. And it wasn't because he wasn't owed those things. And we're going to get into that here in just a minute. So, starting in verse 3, it says, my defense to them that examine me is this. Have we no right to eat and to drink? Have we no right to lead about a wife that is a believer, even as the rest of the apostles and the brethren of the Lord, and Cephas, or Peter? Which, on a side note here, is kind of funny, since this is not the only reference to Peter having a wife. And what do we know about popes with the Catholic Church? Yeah, they're not married. I guess the first pope of the Catholic Church, Mr. Apostle Peter here, was given special exception. Or I only, and Barnabas, have we not the right to forbear working? What soldier ever serves at his own charge? Who plants a vineyard and doesn't eat the fruit thereof? Or who feeds a flock and does not eat the milk of the flock? So, his point here is, that verse 3 refers to what precedes. And that's what I want to get to here. It means that when called to defend his apostleship, Paul would point to the presence of a church, of his established, that he has established in Corinth. And that is his answer to them. I'm an apostle because you are Christians. I helped establish this church because I'm an apostle of the Lord, and you are Christians following him. A similar answer has satisfied the other apostles in Galatians chapter 2, verses 6 through 10. And thus, having proved his apostleship, Paul proceeds to discuss the rights and privileges that are apparent to it. So, over in Galatians chapter 2 and verses 6 through 10, it reads, "But from those who were reputed to be somewhat, and he says, whatsoever they were, it makes no matter to me, God accepts not man's person." And he's talking about the other apostles here. "They, I say, who were of repute, imparted nothing to me. But contrariwise, when they saw that I had been entrusted with the gospel of the uncircumcision, even as Peter with the gospel of the circumcision, for he that wrought for Peter unto the apostleship of the circumcision wrought for me also unto the Gentiles. And when they perceived the grace that was given unto me, James and Cephas and John, they who were reputed to be pillars, gave to me and Barnabas the right hands of fellowship, that we should go unto the Gentiles, and they unto the circumcision. Only they would that we should remember the poor, the very thing which I was also zealous to do." So we see here that, again, he is shown to be an apostle, not only by himself and his actions and what he is doing, but by the other apostles who the Jews accepted as apostles. Because they walked with Jesus while he was here on the earth. But Paul was accepted as an apostle because he was a witness of Jesus Christ. So we just read through them. What rights did Paul and Barnabas have? What rights did they say they had? Yeah. The right to be recompensed for what they were doing. What would Paul say is more valuable? And he's going to say it here in just a little bit. The message he was giving, or the earthly things they were giving back to him? Absolutely. He was giving them the gospel of Christ. He was giving them the hope that's found there. The chance for eternal life. And most of the preachers that would come through there would ask for money, for a place to stay, food, to be well kept. Paul asked for none of these things, but did he have a right to? Let's look into that. He had the right to be fed. He had the right to be married and to bring his believing wife with him, just as most of the other apostles, including Peter. I'm sorry. I meant to say Peter, not Paul there. And he had the right to refrain from working if not paid. So he goes in and gives an example of that. What soldier is going to serve if he's not paid? If he serves at his own charge? How many soldiers do you know that are not being supported are going to hang around and deal with what they're having to deal with? How many of our soldiers do you think that are in Iraq or Afghanistan would be there if back home their family was struggling because there was no money coming in because they were not being supported? Of course you're going to pay a soldier to do his job. Who plants a vineyard and doesn't eat the fruit thereof? This may be foreign to us because of the society we live in now, but in that society, people who tended the vineyard got a percentage of the vineyard. They were paid from what they worked on. Same thing with a shepherd. He feeds the flock, but would he not expect to be paid for what he's doing? Absolutely he would. No one's going to work for free. They had the same rights as all of the other apostles. But they had the same liberties as well. And Paul's going to tell us why he chose not to be paid for what he did. Did others exercise these rights? Well, he told us they did. So, starting in verse 8, he says, "Do I speak these things after the manner of men? Or saith not the law also the same? For it is written in the law of Moses, Thou shalt not muzzle the ox when he treads out the corn. Is it for the oxen that God cares? Or says he, or that he says it assuredly for our sake? Yea, for our sake it was written, because he that plows ought to plow in hope. And he that threshes to thresh in hope of partaking. If we sowed unto you spiritual things, is it a great matter if we reap your carnal things? If others partake of this right over you, do not we yet more? Nevertheless, we did not use this right, but we bear all things that we may cause no hindrance to the gospel of Christ. Know you not that they that minister about sacred things eat of the things of the temple, and they that wait upon the altar have their portion with the altar?" That was already established in the old law. And that was what Paul was saying. The priests partook of the things that were given to the temple. They partook of what was sacrificed on the altars. That was their portion. They were paid. The Levi tribe did not have land, but they were to be given that tithe. That tithe supported the temple, and it supported the Levites who supported the temple. Of course they deserve to be paid for giving the message. Paul knows that the Corinthians have seen firsthand these so-called itinerant preachers who brought messages but demanded payment for the message. He knows he has seen them. But he also knows that they knew the law. They have seen how this works. For millennia, there was no question that just because you weren't doing physical labor, that doesn't mean that you don't get paid when you're doing a work. And they were working. The apostles were working. They were spreading the message of Christ. So had Paul done so? And if not, why not? So here's Paul's answer. Had Paul collected money from these people? Had Paul asked to be fed? Did he ask to be housed? No. No. Verse 12. If others share this right over you, do we not more? Nevertheless, we did not use this right, but we endure all things so that we will cause no hindrance to the gospel of Christ. His benefit, his payment, was what he was getting through his message. What he was getting through establishing these churches throughout the area. He was happy to support himself physically, but continue to do the work and accept the payment that Christ gave him. The hope that he had. So, Paul had not done so, not because he wasn't entitled to it, because he had just established that he was entitled to it. He had not done so in order that there would be no hindrance to the gospel of Christ. Because if he did start collecting, what would the people compare him as? How would he be any different than any other preacher that came through? Exactly. He would demonstrate to them that there's no difference between an apostle of Christ and an apostle of the Roman emperor or of some other foreign god. But they stood out. And the Judaizers grabbed onto that, using their knowledge of what they considered to be an apostle. And since he wasn't collecting, like all the other preachers that came through, they could say, look, he doesn't even consider himself worthy to be paid. On what particular right did Paul focus in these verses? And so these verses we're talking about are verses 13 through 18. Reads like this. Do you not know that those who perform sacred services eat the food of the temple, and those who attend regularly the altar have their share from the altar? So also the Lord directed those who proclaim the gospel to get their living from the gospel. But I have used none of these things, and I am not writing these things so that I will be so it will be done so in my case. For it would be better for me to die than have any man make my boast an empty one. For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of, for I am under compulsion. For woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this voluntarily, I have my reward. But if against my will, I have a stewardship entrusted to me. What then is my reward? That, when I preach the gospel, I may offer the gospel without charge, so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel. So on what particular right did Paul focus in these verses? The right to not be paid. The right to say, you know what? I don't want it. I am being paid by a higher power. He has the same right as those entrusted to the... as the rights that are entrusted to those who serve the Lord. But he also has the right to refuse. And he gives us a very good reason why he does refuse. Let's look at a few verses here, actually. I went too far. I wanted to cover a couple of other things here. So, in Luke chapter 10, verses 5 through 8, we see an example of the rights that these gospel preachers have. Luke chapter 10, verses 5 through 8. Whatever house you enter, first say, peace be to this house. If a man of peace is there, your peace will rest on him. But if not, it will return to you. Stay in that house, eating and drinking what they give you. For the laborer is worthy of his wages. Do not keep moving from house to house. Whatever city you enter and they receive you, eat what is set before you. Christ instructed them what wages they were worthy of taking. They were worthy of being supported by the people around them. They were working hard to spread the gospel message. They were full-time working to spread the gospel message. It did not give them time to work. It did not give them time to collect wages so that they could support themselves. But Paul says, you know what? It's worthy of my time to spend absolutely as much time as I can preaching the gospel. And when I can't support myself, then others will support me. But you know what? I can support myself. And I'm going to do everything I can to spread the gospel and show you that not only can I spread the gospel and establish a church and be as good an influence to those around me as I can, but I can also support myself. Because my payment is in the gospel of Christ. So that I do not hinder that gospel message. So that you do not compare me to those around that you see that are willing to take anything and everything that you will give them. I show you that I do not exercise my full right. I stay away from that line, wherever that line is that is drawn. That I have rights to these things, but I am not taking that right. I am not exercising it. Has Paul exercised this right? If not, then why not? And I think we've covered this pretty well. No, Paul had not exercised that right either. And he considered the spreading of the gospel reward enough. Paul had a right to receive wages for his labor, and this right was guaranteed both by the customs of the people and the law of Moses. He also had a right to some recompense as an equivalent for the blessings which he bestowed. Moreover, he had a right to receive as fair treatment as that bestowed upon others. Again, he had a right as a man engaged in sacred affairs to be paid by those who enjoyed his services. And lastly, as a minister of Christ, the law of Christ demanded that he be supported. Paul had urged none of these rights, nor did he now assert them that he might shame the Corinthians for their neglect or prepare them to change their conduct toward him when he visited them as he intended. The idea here wasn't to talk down to the Corinthians. It was to say, I want you to see a different thing. I want you to see what the gospel of Christ is about. I want you to see how this message can change your life. This is the way you should behave. So far from desiring pay from the Corinthians, he preferred to die rather than to receive it. For to do so would deprive him of the glory and joy of preaching the gospel without earthly reward. By denying himself wages, Paul obtained free access to all men and could found new churches. He glorified in the salvation of souls and in the honoring of Christ. So again, this idea that if he was collecting wages, are there certain parts of the population that he wouldn't be able to reach? Could everybody pay? Could he reach the poor who couldn't pay? By not collecting wages, Paul opened himself up to be able to preach to everyone. And everyone could gladly receive the message being given for free. Because Paul was able to support himself, and the Lord would help support him as well. But he didn't have to worry about preaching to other people or not being able to preach to people because he didn't have payment. And that's what he says there, is that I get my payment from the gospel, from seeing it spread, from seeing Christians come into the body, from seeing churches founded, and that's all I need. I don't expect anymore. I will not fully exercise my rights. So identify the categories of people that Paul referred to in verses 19 through 22. So there are four categories of people here. Starting in verse 19, for though I am free from all men, I have made myself a slave to all, so that I may win more. To the Jews, I became a Jew, so that I might win Jews. To those that are under the law, as under the law, though not being myself under the law, so that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law, though not being without the law of God, but under the law of Christ, so that I might win those who are without law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men so that I may by all means save some. So what's the first category here? To the Jews. He says, to the Jews I became a Jew. And we're going to look in more detail on these things in just a minute. What's the second category? Those under the law. So Jews, also proselytes, those who were not originally of the Jewish community, but who came into the Jewish community, those who followed the law of Moses. Third, those without law. Who are these? Everybody else. Everybody else who chooses not to be under the law of Moses. And he says here, not that they're not under law, because they're under God's law, the law of Christ. All men are, but they weren't under the law of Moses. And finally, the weak. And we looked at the weak last week in chapter 8. And we'll look at that again here in just a minute. So, what was his conduct toward all of these people? And what was his conduct toward all of these people?
He adapted to every situation.
He did what he needed to do to show the people that he could be just like them. Now, does that mean he's putting on multiple faces? I don't think so. Let's look around. I want to show you a few things. Back just a chapter in 1 Corinthians 8, verse 13. He says, therefore, if food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again, so that I will not cause my brother to stumble. He's willing to give up freedom in order to be as good an example as possible and to not tempt his brother. He conformed himself to all shapes and all forms of character that he met if he could do so without sin. For the Jews, he kept their distinctions as to meat. Chapter 8, verse 13. He was willing to forego meat offered to idols because that may cause his brother to stumble. And he performed their rites as to vows. In Acts chapter 21 and verse 26, then Paul took the men, and the next day, purifying himself, went along with them, went into the temple, giving notice of the completion of the days of purification until the sacrifice was offered for each one of them. He kept their special days. It wasn't a sin for him to do so. And it showed that he could be like them. And he honored their feasts. Acts chapter 20 and verse 16. For Paul had decided to sail past Ephesus so that he would not have to spend time in Asia. For he was hurrying to be in Jerusalem, if possible, on the day of Pentecost. To the Jews, he was a Jew. The day of Pentecost was absolutely something that he could not miss. And he classified himself as a Pharisee. Acts chapter 23 and verse 6. But perceiving that one group were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, Paul began crying out in the council, brethren, I am a Pharisee, a son of Pharisees. I am on trial for the hope and resurrection of the dead. Was Paul a Pharisee? Well, was Saul of Tarsus a Pharisee? A Pharisee, absolutely. And we studied that in pretty great detail in the Galatian letter as well. What does he call himself? A Pharisee of Pharisees. He studied at the feet of Gamaliel. Like, he was a guy that was going to be heading for the high priest type thing. I mean, he was a Pharisee of Pharisees. Moving on, and even had circumcision administered. Acts chapter 16 and verse 3. Paul wanted this man to go with him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those parts, for they all knew that his father was Greek. But he did that where it did not interfere with the liberty of the Gentiles. And in Galatians chapter 2, verses 3 through 5, but not even Titus, who was with me, though he was a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised. But it was because of the false brethren secretly brought in, who had sneaked in to spy out our liberty, which we had in Christ Jesus, in order to bring us into bondage. But we did not yield in subjection to them, even for an hour, so that the truth of the gospel would remain with you. On one hand, he circumcised the man, because he was going to take him to preach to the Jews. It was going to be a stumbling block to the Jews if he wasn't a circumcised man. On the other hand, Titus, he did not compel him to be circumcised then and there, because it was something they were trying to take from him. They wanted him to be circumcised to take his liberty. It had nothing to do with stumbling blocks. It had to do with them berating him. So he was all things to all people, but without sinning. When it was an expediency, when it didn't matter. If it came to a point of doctrine, and his doctrine was butting heads with somebody else's, he would not be able to conform to that. But he could conform to those things that didn't matter. To the Jews, the day of Pentecost was important. And he was willing to partake of that. To the Jews, eating meat sacrificed to idols was abhorrent. And he was willing to forego that. He did say in Romans and in the last chapter that, and Jerry touched on this and covered it pretty well, I think, last week, what he does when others aren't around is none of their business. They need to keep their nose out of other people's business. If he eats that meat, which does not prick his conscience, when there aren't Jews around, they have nothing to say about it. They're not there. It has nothing to do with them. But he does say here that he would forego meat altogether if he thought it would further the cause of Christ. To those under the law, we see proselytes as real as Jews. How about as well as Jews? To them that are under the law, this is to them that are under the law, this expression includes proselytes as well as Jews. To these also Paul made harmless confessions. As under the law, not being myself under the law. Sorry, I lost my place. That I might gain them that are under the law. Harmless confessions. Things that didn't matter to those that were under the law. And again, this is a similar category to the Jews, but we're including also proselytes now, those who weren't of Jewish descent, but had chosen to be under the law of Moses. He was willing to keep their special feast days, their holidays, their rites, some of them. Their R-I-T-E-S rites. To those without law. And we covered this very well in the Galatian letter. These are the Gentiles. Paul would not enforce the law of Moses on the Gentiles. To those without law, he was as without law. He did not press the law of Moses on them. They had no business being under the law of Moses. They were never under it. They were under the law of Christ. There's no reason to put them under the law of Moses. It's been done away with. Carol.
Are these all Gentiles, or are these Gentiles Christians who've become Christians? In your Galatian class where you were talking about they, by putting them under, by bringing them back into the law, that this was taking away their freedom. So is it all Jews or Christians?
All. Are you talking about those who are without law?
Yeah.
Okay, so those who are without law are those who are without the law of Moses. We're talking about the law of Moses. So we're not talking about law in general. When, almost always when Paul's talking about the law, he's talking about the law of Moses. So those who are without law, Paul, of course, is not going to be as the one who is without the law of Christ. That would be doctrinally inappropriate. He can't go into worshiping idols and such without law. He's without the law of Moses. He's not going to press the law of Moses on those who have no business being under the law of Moses. They aren't Jews. They never submitted to that law.
And the law had been done away with. I mean, we're still in this transition period between full establishment of the kingdom of Christ is still being established. So there are still those who are under the law of Moses that were not coming into that law of Christ.
But they're slowly fading away. For all who have sinned without the law will perish without the law, says Romans chapter 2 and verse 12. And all who have sinned under the law will be judged by the law. So, as without law, in Romans chapter 6 and verse 14, for sin shall not be a master over you, you are not under the law, but under grace. So this whole idea of not being under the law, it's not being under law, period. It's being under the law of Moses. They are under the law of grace, which requires things of you.
God's grace is for all men. But all men are not going to receive the bounty of God's grace without following God's instructions, His commandments,
which puts us under the law of Christ. He did not seek to enforce the law of Moses among the Gentiles, as did the Jews. And we saw that when we were studying the Galatians as well. Those Judaizers were coming in trying to press circumcision on the Gentiles, trying to press the law of Moses onto the Gentiles. And he refrained from insulting heathens in their belief. In Acts chapter 19 and verse 37, for you have brought these men here who are neither robbers of temples nor blasphemers of our goddess. Acts chapter 19 verse 37. And he dealt gently with their prejudices. In Acts chapter 17 and verse 30, therefore, having overlooked the times of ignorance, God is now declaring to all men that all people everywhere should repent. Not being without law to God, for the Gentiles themselves were not wholly without such law. In Romans chapter 2, verses 14 and 15, for when Gentiles who do not have the law do instinctively the things of the law, these, having not the law, are a law to themselves, in that they show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience bearing witness, and their thoughts alternately accusing or else defending them. Okay? This idea of not being under the law, under the law of Moses. They're not out of law altogether. All men are under God's law. But under law to Christ. Paul did not forget his obligation to the moral law, nor his duty to the will of Christ. Though behaving himself as a Jew in Jerusalem in things indifferent, he rebuked Peter openly for playing the Jew in Antioch in matters of principle. And we went into great detail on this in our Galatian letter where Peter acted aloof, as you remember that discussion. Peter knew better in Acts chapter 15 and verse 10 that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak I became weak that I might gain the weak. The preceding chapter is the best comment on this passage of the week. Paul was uniformly self-sacrificing and patient with those who were over-scrupulous. He was all things to all men, fulfilling any expediencies that were necessary in order for them to see him as what he was. He was a man under the law of God, under the law of Christ. What was the twofold reason for thinking and acting the way he did? His twofold reason. Number one, to save souls. Number two, to partake in the gospel. Two reasons. He was working as hard as he could to save souls, and he himself wanted to partake in the gospel, in that good news. Describe Paul's attitude toward himself and striving to accomplish his twofold purpose. He says in verses 24 through 27, do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. Everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore, I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air, but I discipline my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified. What was his attitude? He considers himself a competitor just like everybody else. He is no better than anyone else. In fact, we read that Paul considers himself the least of the kingdom of God. But his attitude was, he was striving just as hard as they were to fulfill what God had purposed for him. What does this say about our attitude, about what our attitude must be if we expect to achieve the same twofold purpose? What is the point here?
To run with certainty.
To run with certainty. To always put others ahead of ourselves. We can be all things to all people as well. Paul is not unique in this. We have the ability, if we want to be a spreader of the gospel, to forego certain things that would cause others to stumble. We have that opportunity, we have that right, to forego our rights, to not approach that line where this is right and this is a right that we aren't given. We don't have to exercise our rights fully. Paul did not, in order that he may spread the gospel better. So we must compete like someone who wants to win the prize. That's what Paul did. He gave things up in order to be the best competitor possible. In order to be the best. That concludes our study for today. Next week, we'll be looking at Chapter 10, Jerry Returns. And if you have not, pick up a question sheet for next week. They're already in the back. They're already in the back. They're already in the back.